Let's begin by reviewing. I think you have the pictures of from the Madod Eich Midod, the discussion of the Chaim's Darach HaLimud, and then try to understand something that we haven't, something we haven't touched upon yet. So you have page, I think it was page 75, under the heading Arukah Me'eretz Midah. In Hachazot Ritzufat HaHashra'a Olem LaHakara HaDiscoursivit HaZaka VaHamechuvaret. So it begins with a vision, with an intuition. I think, you know, the the choice of terminology in terms of, you know, a vision, but both in its with its simple association and it's also true if one, you know, makes the association with Nevuah. It means that initially it's not in categories of thought, right? If someone beholds a vision, whether it's a physical vision, or whether it's a Navi beholding a prophetic vision, so what again, in the first scenario, literally what one sees, in the second scenario, what one sees in quotation marks, it is not in, is not something discursive. You're not seeing units of words and units of thoughts. And it's something that if, you're then challenged to share it, to communicate it, to convey it, so then you have to convert it into categories of thoughts and words. And that's what the Rav is describing here, right? You know, whenever something is initially, again, in the Moshul, you know, maybe describe, again, the Moshul originally gave us a vision, you can give a Moshul of an experience, the Nimshal is this intuition. But the initial stage, the source, isn't the, doesn't happen, doesn't unfold, isn't experienced, again, in categories of thought. But in order to be not only communicated, but even to be fully understood for oneself, it needs to be converted into categories of thought. Right? It's famous that Rav Chaim used to say, was felt in hasbara, felt in havana. What a person can't explain, a person doesn't understand. That for oneself also, that to really fully understand and fully process, again, that intuition, that vision, that experience, one needs to be able to convert it. Again, when the Rav introduced us to the Sfiros, one needs to make the step from Chochma to Bina, from, again, some intuition, experience, vision to categories of thought that can be expressed in through concepts and through words. Kshehagaon ma'ale et chazono ledarkat chashiva hegyonit. Again, this is the process that we were just talking about. Hu poteach, he begins v'pu'ulat yitzira spontanit she'ena mefareshet et hanatun hamuchashi ela mamtzi'a konstruktziot mufshatot. Initially, one isn't interpreting the tangible, physical fact, but is creating abstract constructs. Ha'alat ha'chazon la'hasaga, elevating vision to comprehension, v'ha'intuitzia l'konceptzia, and the intuition to concept, ki ma'aseh yotzer ha'boneh olam ideali, is an act, is a creative act, which constructs an ideal world, shemitkapel ba'atzmuto u'motzeyet erko v'tachlito, בדלת עמותיו ובמערכת היחסים שבין העצמים המופשטים. Trying to give an example to explain what that means. Let's say you have, say you're dealing with a ben odom chavero situation. I don't know, there's friction in a relationship, or maybe even without friction, maybe hadracha is being sought in how that relationship should develop, should function. So what the Rav is explaining is that, again, using this as the moshel to the nimshal of halacha and the world of halacha, is that the way you begin the process is not, you know, looking at the two individuals who are, you know, the ones seeking the hadracha. Again, to what extent, you know, the nimshel is true for the moshel is not our interest, okay? We're interested in this as a moshel for halacha. But you begin by understanding, you know, in an ideal world, what does friendship mean? In an ideal world, and never mind Reuven and Shimon here. In an ideal world, what does friendship mean? What does the Rambam in Perashim Shas and others tell you mean? How does he explain to us what a friendship means? In an ideal world, I don't know if it's not the Reuben and Shimon, if it's Avraham and Sarah. So in an ideal world, you know, what should a marriage look like? What should the marital bond be, and how should it be expressed? And then And on that level, you're not being mesiaches. At that level, you're not being mesiaches to Reuben and Shimon. You're not being mesiaches to Ata Avram and Sarah. Ainu mefarashet et hanatun hamuchashi, ela mamtzia constructas mufshatot. And it needs to be again, internally coherent vision. Then the way you go from the abstract to the practical, well, in light of that, so how, then you figure out how should that play out in context of Reuven and Shimon? How should that play out in context of Avram and Sarah? As opposed to, you know, how do Reuven and Shimon build a friendship? As opposed to how do Avram and Sarah cultivate a marriage? It begins in the ideal world, right? The point is not how to approach therapy. You know, again, to what extent the nimshal holds for the moshal is not at all, not implying anything ki huzeh. Okay. Rabbi Chaim shen nichan beintuitzia halachid brucha. You know, there is, I don't know, what word you choose sort of, you know, depends upon one's perspective and opinion here. Yeah? There is a view out there that says, you know, that if you only want something enough, so, you know, you only want it enough, and you only done for it enough, the Roshim gives it to you. Let's say, at the very least, not everyone agrees with that. Reb Chaim's Amola in Yegiya was almost superhuman. Maybe from the standards by which we operate, it was superhuman. But his natural kochos were also extraordinary. The Baal HaTanya writes in his Shulchan Aruch that what a person's capacity is for Talmud Torah depends upon the ability that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave. One person is going to need to do much more chazara to remember and retain than another person, and because of that, he's obviously going to progress at a very different pace than the person who's blessed with different kochos ha'azikaron, and you know, because of that, there's an adjusted standard in terms of, you know, what for him mitzvahs Talmud Torah means. The Osameach has a little essay in Hilchos Talmud Torah where he says that he says it about all mitzvahs, but about Talmud Torah as well. He says that in general, what you find in the Furush and Torah Shavuksav is the least common denominator of mitzvahs. That level of kiyum ha-mitzvah, that level of chiyum and kiyum that everyone is capable of. But then beyond that, we all have different abilities, different capacities, and in different areas. And then everyone is supposed to go beyond, not everyone, but anyone who in that area, you know, has been blessed with abilities, again, whether it's in terms of Tikkun HaMidos, whether it's in terms of Talmud Torah, whatever the area is supposed to go beyond the least common denominator to the best of his ability. L'chor, that's, I don't think, of course, but L'chor, that's the pshat. I think it's the smak. I think Ivan Soloveitchik in one of his Divrei Torah quotes this. I think the smak lists in his Minyan HaMitzvahs to go with the Mishra Sadeh. That seems to be stira minei uvein, no? The definition of the lefnei mishur sadin is that it's lefnei mishur sadin, right? So how can that be a mitzvah? No, but according to the Lassamech, you understand how it can be a mitzvah, right? Because the shur sadin is reflects the least common denominator, and then we all have a chiyuv to, when appropriate, when in that area we have a capacity which is above the least common denominator to work to the best of our ability and to take advantage of that capacity. So Reb Chaim Nichan, again, his incredible yegiyah and amola, which the Rav goes on to describe here in the Hesped, the total involvement and the intensity of the involvement. Reb Chaim trained his sons to always be thinking in the Midrash. And at random times, he would turn to them and say, "What are you thinking about?" So the story is that once he turned to, I don't know how old he was at the time, but you know, he was a kid, chronologically, not describing where he was spiritually or intellectually, but chronologically a kid. So he turned to the Rav's father and said to him, "What are you thinking about?" And he said, he was thinking about, if you have a Kohen who's an androgynous and he's 12 years old, is he allowed to be in the time of the Mason? Reb Chaim Shenichan beIntuitza Halachit Brucha. He was, again, a good Baruch Hu gave him, right? Chanina is Lashon Matnas Chinam. Baruch Hu blessed him with this capacity. But again, he had capacities are potentials. They have to be developed. They have to be cultivated. They have to be tapped into. Again, it in no way detracts from the human element and effort and exertion that are required. Reb Chaim Shenichan beIntuitza Halachit Brucha himtzi et midat ha-conceptualization b'shtei ha-halacha. Meaning, when Reb Chaim's analysis, again, wasn't about tangible, physical, but he moved away from the tangible and the physical. Again, in our moshel, you move away from Reuven and Shimon, and before you reflect on Reuven and Shimon, you understand, you know, what's a friendship supposed to look like? So that's, right, you're moving away from the concrete to the abstract, from the phenomenon to the concept. Humana olam shel idiot v'gila et ha-konstruksia halachit ha-chofshit. Im nitmatzei k'tzat b'midat of the conceptualization and mathematization shel ha-teva of the natural world she'achazuba avot ha-fizika ha-klasit v'ha-modernit, that the fathers of classical and modern physics, again, classical, not the way we use classical when we talk about classics, ancient Greece and Rome, classical meaning, as the Rav says, Mimos Galileo and Newton, that's classical physics. Adli Yameinu, with all the changes, whatever, with Einstein, whatever, Navi gamet midato shel Reb Chaim b'halacha hadomeh ba'ofen muzar l'gishat ha-mada'im ha-matematiyim la'olam ha-mamashi. Ha-fizika ha-aristotelit b'ksha l'va'eret ha-metziut m'b'chinat mahuta ha-ichutit u'la-hafitz or bahir al t'chanim mu'chashi'im. Hakruchim b'tahalach shel giroi v'havana, shel v'hagava, excuse me, So Aristotelian science, Aristotelian physics, we experience the world in a qualitative, on a qualitative level, right? In a qualitative dimension. Hot, we're cold, we see light, we see different colors. The world will have been many generations, meaning until Galileo and Newton. Dorod rabim ha'aminu b'tom livam, b'som livam, b'efsharot ha'ara racionalit, b'yachas l'yesh ha'ichuti ha'mamashi. They thought that you could understand, that you could investigate scientifically the qualitative world that we experience. Physica haklasit v'gam ha-modernit, classical physics and as well as modern physics, vitra, it yielded al yozma no azazo. This insolent initiative. Hitafsa ta'ofi ha'is sechli shel tevel umlo'a kishahim ofiya b'dmuta ha-kama'it ha-yom yomit. It recognized that you can't explain that. It's just an experience of cold, of heat, of light, of darkness. The deeper truth, shenit galtal macholalei madaei hatavahi, those who brought about this scientific revolution, she'en ha'adam yachol la'amod al atzmutan shel tofa'ot muchashiyot al hakiran. Person can't really explain the qualitative dimension. Ram yesh biyado, what he can do is litzur konstruktio tzuraniot kamutiyot. המקבילות לתופעות המוחשיות שאינן נתפסות בסדריות והתייחסות מתמטיות. And just as we said earlier in terms of the moshe we were giving, correlativium idealium eile shekol mashmutam einas funa ba'atzmam elav hezdakekutam ahada'it b'tzurat mishva'ot matematiot nehepchu la'objekt shel hamechkar hamada'i. So the Rav explains that the revolution of the scientific revolution was to attempt to build a quantitative model to explain the world. What does that mean? So if you take chemistry, so every reaction you can write as an equation. Right? You can write what the chemical reaction is as an equation. So an equation isn't something that makes you hot, that makes you cold, that right? It's a different dimension. It's a different way of depicting. It's a quantitative model for the qualitative experience that we have. Those words make any sense? Again, a person doesn't you know, if you ask a person what he's experiencing, if he has a chemical imbalance in the brain, he will not answer with an equation, right? He'll answer symptomatically. He'll answer qualitatively. But the way modern science understands it is that they will explain it, right? It will be depicted quantitatively in terms of, you know, such and such a chemical reaction is happening, and this molecule is breaking down, and et cetera. Tochnei, that's what this next line means. Tchusha, kagon tzvaim, kolot, chom. Sensory content, such as colors, sounds, heat, nehepchu, were transformed, lekamuyot mufshato taharot, were transformed into pure, abstract quantities, she'en lehen ela hayachas ha-hadadi. That you have that, again, the relationship in terms of the two sides of the equation, in terms of how the molecules get reconfigured when you have this reaction. Olam fizikali zeh shetzuraf vizukak misigei ha-chushaniyot. This physical world that was purified from sensuality, from the, again, the qualitative, hu reshut ha-hakara ha-mada'it. Skip to the next paragraph. But ofen dome, in a similar fashion, nahag Rabbi Chaim b'halocha. That's how Rabbi Chaim approached and acted in terms of learning Torah, learning halocha. Kodem kol tiheret halacha mikol sugei gishot min hachutz. He purified halacha from all kinds of external approaches. Al pishitato, according to Reb Chaim's derech, yesh l'tchot b'shnei yadayim, you totally reject et pu'ulat ha-psychologizatia, psychologizing and historicizing halacha. Kemochen yesh lefsol et hagisha habalavatit. Again, when the Rav says, he means prosaic common sense, that there is a common sense of the world of halacha, but he means the common sense of the mundane, as opposed to the common sense of halacha, when he's saying that it's disqualified. Sheyesh ba hitrashmut svila, which only reflects passive impression, v'lo yitzira pe'ila, and not active creativity. Hachashiva ha-hilchit mitno'at, halachic thought, moves b'maslul miyuchad mishala, on its own track. Chukeha ve'ekronoteha, its axioms, its principles, einam psychologiim udatiim, that they're not psychological, they're not factual, kiim idealiim normativiim, they're ideal, normative. The Rav goes on to explain how, again, this doesn't mean that halacha is out of touch with reality, but on the contrary, it tells you how how halacha doesn't react to reality. Halacha provides an ideal world based on which we then know how to relate to reality, as opposed to halacha just being reactive. Okay, now. So let's try to keep this on one side of the screen. On the other side of the screen, it's been a few weeks. Let's try to review the Rav's profound chiddush in explaining what halacha is, what Torah is. So as we discussed and tried to give examples of, unlike human legal systems, which begin with concrete situations and figure out, well, how do we deal with it? How do we regulate? How do we legislate? So halacha doesn't begin with a concrete situation. Halacha begins with what the ideal in the world of ideas should be, and then on the contrary. And then in light of that, so what should we be doing in this concrete situation? And this has profound implications for Talmud Torah, as well as for spirituality, for Avodas Hashem, which is what the Rav is developing here, in terms of its profound implications for Talmud Torah. Again, so one example we gave was the Chuvas HaRashba that the Beis Yosef has, is that you would have thought that everything about Gvias Eidos and who's Kosher Eidos, who's Posel Eidos, that everything is, okay, when something happens in this world, you know, how should we try to establish the truth of what happened? And yet, it's clear from the Rashba, no, that's only if you need to shift gears. But the dinim of who's koshelaidus, who's posselaidus, of drishul chakir, etc., is not that. Why? Because, again, it's exactly this idea, right? That we don't begin by looking to legislate and regulate and navigate. We begin is, no, what should Gvias Eidos look like? In an ideal world, who should be giving Eidos? So again, that's one example of its profound implications in terms of Talmud Torah, and again, the type of svara one gives. Again, it's not a svara, again, which is psychological, which is historical, because it all comes from, and then it also has profound implications for spirituality. Spirituality that given the impulse that the Ish Hadat, without the Ayin, has to try to connect to what's transcendent, which is ultimately a futile attempt, because a person is physical, he's guf anefesh, he's not transcendent. No, so halacha brings the transcendent down into this world. Right? That's the profound implications in terms of Avodas Hashem. We haven't read all that yet. Okay, good. Now, here's the point, Alyssa. Here's the point. This shouldn't be... This isn't reducing, oversimplifying, but one definitely needs to recognize the parallel between the description of Reb Chaim's Derech HaLimud and the description of what halacha is here in Isha Halacha. Isha Halacha could not have been written, could not have been understood. The chiddush, the central thesis of Isha Halacha could never ever have been discovered, could never have been understood by anyone other than someone who, with his tremendous natural blessings and endowments, grew up immersed in Reb Chaim's Derech. Because to a very significant extent, it's a philosophical understanding of what Reb Chaim was intuitively doing. And the parallels, when you look at it, it's just so, you know, one of the things that the Rav says, you know, about a chiddush is one of the, you know, telltale characteristics of an authentic chiddush is that when you hear it, it's obvious. The Rav draws upon the same analogies and the same analogy to how the mathematicians function. He draws on that analogy here in Isha Halacha, draws on the same analogy in trying to explain to people what it is that Reb Chaim was doing. And it was based on that. I'm not saying that there aren't, that's what I'm saying, not to oversimplify and not to be guilty of reductionism. I'm not saying that there aren't other intellectual factors that which are relevant. There are. But indispensable and central to the philosophy of the halacha, it's an outgrowth of Reb Chaim's Derech Halima. And the truth is that the best introduction, again, so you have to go back and forth in terms of which you can understand, but in a certain sense, the best introduction to Isha Halacha is this section of the Hesped of Mador Dech Midot. Again, none of that, you know, in the least bit detracts from or diminishes the originality of Isha Halacha. But it explains the intellectual background and part of it, not all of it, part of the intellectual background. If one understood, as the Rav uniquely did, what was happening in how Reb Chaim explained, understood, analyzed, so if you have the kelim to understand that, and the kelim are not only natural genius and endowment, but that certainly is part of it. So then what that yields is this understanding of halach that you have in Isha Halach. You hear that understanding? That, I think, is Kimdumani, absolutely crucial point to what we've been learning. And that's how it, these two interconnect and interrelate. You can, you know, one could even, I mean, who does? I mean, no one anymore. But one could even, you know, really, really practice Reb Chaim's Derech and not recognize what it represents. You could be practicing it again, sort of, you know, kind of paradoxically, intuitively, you know, without making that translation of what that reflects about about halacha and what its implications are, again, not only for Talmud Torah, but for Avodas Hashem. The same way, you know, in the same vein as the Mishlom the Rav gives, you can be a very good scientist and not be able to have certain reflections about science that a philosopher of science can give you. So for instance, if you go ask, once upon a time, you go ask an Indian chief, you know, what causes rain? So he'll show you the dance. And I'm not sure if he'll show you the necessarily outfits or not. I'm not sure exactly all the pratim of the theory. I'm telling you, you do that and it rains. So the shaila is, you know, before... We're not thinking of voting whether it's right or wrong, but is that a scientific theory or not? Is that a scientific theory? Even if you'll disprove it empirically, you'll show that you can dance and dance and then it doesn't rain, and then you don't dance and it does rain. You'll disprove it. But was it a scientific theory that's disproven? So what distinguishes something which is a legitimate scientific theory from something which is magic and hocus pocus? So Lam Davka that a scientist may be doing that 100% correctly, but he may not be able to reflect upon what it is that distinguishes the two. So this in no way, again, what we're saying in no way diminishes or detracts from the tremendous chiddush and originality of the Rav and Isha Halacha, but that is the an indispensable part of the background.